You and Ari Malian. Gombanagu Radri Doombang. Ma Ingudulan Totem. G'day. Welcome to Radri Country. We are the people of the Goanna Totem. This welcome is brought to you from 2MCE in the shadow of Wailu, our sacred mountain.
Good day. You are listening to 2MCE. I am Eleanor Edwards. And recently I interviewed international soprano Marusha Lawase. Often referred to as the Angel of Australia, she is known for being Andre Rieu's star soprano and has been touring with his orchestra for over a decade. She was the youngest ever winner of the Dame Joan Sutherland Opera Award and is the only classical artist with a number one Aria Chart Award. Marusha's singing career started dramatically in Europe, under contract with the amazing Andre Rieu and his Johann Strauss Orchestra. So I began by asking, what was it like in those early days to sing before such large audiences?
Oh, you know, it was really wild to be launched into such an international career at only 21 years old. I mean, I was just a girl living in Brisbane, and the next minute I'm living in Europe and I'm singing before tens of thousands of people each night around the world internationally. So we're talking about the United States of America, Canada, the whole of Europe. We've been to South Africa, Asia, you name it, we've probably been them. So to be launched into such an international career at such a young age, it was pretty wild because most days I didn't really believe what was happening. But because I was having so much fun as well, time just flew by. And suddenly here we are in 2020 and it's like it all just happened yesterday.
Had you travelled much beforehand?
I had been to the Netherlands a numerous amount of times because that's where my family are originally from. You know, Europe was basically the place where I used to go all the time on holiday.
Did you find that having the Dutch background helped you to learn other languages?
Absolutely. I mean, my first language was Dutch. You know, when I had to go to kindergarten, they definitely were like, oh, goodness me, how are we going to teach this young girl how to speak English quickly? And that was through song, and that's what fueled my passion for singing. It's been an absolute blessing to be bilingual and to have those language skills. And it was such a coincidence that I ended up living in the Netherlands, where my family were actually from. I mean, that is just wild. I mean, it's like it was meant to be. It was fate. And so it absolutely helped me to not only speak Dutch in where I was living in the Netherlands, but also helped me to pick up a grasp of German. So, you know, I could definitely watch German TV and understand what's going on. And that's very exciting because, you know, once you can pick up other languages, you start to do that with others too. So, yeah, definitely helps to have that understanding of another language. Even if it's just a basic knowledge, you're able to get around there and that's really fantastic.
So you said you learnt how to speak English through songs. What kind of music did you grow up listening to?
So that was when I was about 3 or 4 years old. I was, you know, learning the English language through song. So children's songs like Don Spencer's Feathers, Fur or Fins or Peter Coombe. He had an album out called Spaghetti Bolognese. So nowadays you would probably think more the Wiggles, who are the big sort of leaders in children's entertainment in Australia. And then growing up into my childhood and my teenage years, I loved a whole variety of music. I mean, I loved the Grease soundtrack and Olivia Newton-John. I loved Meryl Bainbridge, who was a really popular singer in the 90s. I absolutely loved listening to The Seekers, Andrew Lloyd Webber anthology. I had this like 3-CD set and I used to put it on all the time. So I can sing you all the Andrew Lloyd Webber hits because I was obsessed with that album. But also loved other things too, the things that were popular at the time. Spice Girls and Aqua, they were all very in the 90s and early 2000s. And then, of course, moving on, when I started to study classical music, I grew a love for other sopranos like Cecilia Bartoli and Kathleen Battle. Absolutely love listening to their voices. But also on the other spectrum, I love listening to Sarah Brightman, who was really doing some interesting things with popra.
Yes, that sounds amazing. I've actually seen you perform on The Wiggles. Can you tell us how that opportunity came about?
Well, I grew up in Brisbane, and the purple wiggle, Lockie Wiggle, some of the listeners may know him as, we grew up together. And basically we used to sing together in all sorts of little gigs around Brisbane, bridal expos, and we'd be dressed as a bride and a groom, and we'd be singing these love duets, and we were trying to get gigs, you know, back in the day. And so fast forward years later, I studied at the Queensland Conservatorium. He studied at WAPA over in Western Australia. And, you know, you stay in touch with your friends, and it was so interesting to see how our careers were going. Suddenly I'm working around the world with André Rieu, and he, a few years later, got the opportunity to work with the Wiggles as the Purple Wiggle. So, you know, it's been a wonderful friendship that we have, and recently we did do a big interview on the internet about our friendship. It's available on my social media account, so you can see it there. But it's such a lovely opportunity to then collaborate and to work together. And the Wiggles have come to see me sing in my concerts. In one particular day, we were in Darwin at the same time. And it doesn't often happen that as a touring artist, you're in the same city as your friends at the same time. So it was really amazing. So they came to see my concert in Darwin at night time. And then the next morning, we all went to see the Wiggles in the morning at their venue. So it was really, really fun. And then we decided, let's do a collaboration. So we did a video called Twinkle Twinkle Little Star, which we filmed at the Brisbane City Hall. And this video has had 21 million views or something like that on YouTube. It's pretty crazy. And that collaboration just is evolving constantly. And last Christmas, we did some shows together, and we did the Carols in the Domain together. So it's really lovely to work with artists that are completely different from you. I mean, children's entertainment is a completely different field to mine, where my audience are more the grandparents of their audience. So, you know, it's lovely to be able to collaborate in that way.
Ah, sounds wonderful. One of the most extraordinary acts I've ever seen you perform was your High Wire Flying in Maastricht, singing a song from Mary Poppins. I'm not sure that I could be so brave. Can you tell us a bit about that experience?
Well, you're right. It was pretty full on. I mean, I think at the time I just did it and I didn't think about it too much. It was just like, okay, well, this is the show, so this is what I've got to do, the end. But looking back, you know, it's pretty insane. I mean, I had to do a training course to fly on the wire. And so there's a minimum amount of hours that you need to fly. So sound checks are also taken into account for that. And basically, I mean, luckily I didn't have to do many tricks or anything. It was basically just hanging and flying and singing supercalifragilisticexpialidocious. And previously I'd flown on the wire as an angel singing an operatic aria. So I knew how it worked. It's not like it was something new to me. But this time it was an open air concert. So I was literally flying 50 metres off the ground above the audience. So I'm flying above people who were all looking up to see this Mary Poppins flying overhead. And it was really exciting. I mean, I think for me it was more like going on a ride, you know, when you go to Disneyland or Movie World and then you're on a ride. And that's basically how it felt, except I was actually performing. So, I mean, it was really great. It was great fun. Loved it. And who knows, maybe there'll be another opportunity someday to fly high on the wire.
That sounds like a real adventure. I hope you are enjoying the interview so far. This is Eleanor Edwards interviewing international soprano Marisha. I am also a singer myself. I am an up-and-coming soprano undergoing artist development with Marisha. I would like to share with you a song that is dear to my heart, as I'm sure it is for you too. The Celtic classic, Danny Boy.
Oh, Danny Boy, the pipes are calling from glen to glen and down the mountainside. The summer's gone and all the roses falling. It's you, must go and I must bide. But come you sow. But when ye come, and all the flowers are dying, if I am dead as dead I well may be, ye come and find the place where I am lying, and kneel and say an ave there for me, and I shall hear though soft you tread above me, and all my grave shall be, for you shall bend and tell me that you love me, and I shall sleep in peace until you come to
talking to international soprano Marisha Luise, known as the Angel of Australia, and discussing her exciting career, travelling the world, and how she came to be the superstar we know and love today. Coming up, she will tell us about her flourishing solo career.
Hi!
After secondary school, you studied for a Bachelor of Music in Classical Voice in Performance with Excellence at Griffith University Queensland Conservatorium. Can you explain if this is when you decided to apply for the Dame Joan Sutherland Award and how this decision changed your life?
That's a really interesting question, because when I was at high school, I didn't really know where to go to sing. I mean, I knew that I wanted to be a singer, and it's always been my lifelong dream. But, you know, how do you go about that? How do you become a singer? So I was so lucky to have a music teacher at my high school who said, you should study at the conservatorium because that is the best way to learn all the basics you need to know about singing and to go really in depth about it, do a degree in it. So I auditioned for the conservatorium, and at that moment, I actually had never sung opera before. So it was all very new to me, and I auditioned with an Andrea Bocelli song and a Phantom of the Opera song. So I wasn't singing any opera at the time. I didn't really know how to approach it. So I went in there saying, look, I don't know anything about this, but I'm coming here to learn. And I think that the teachers loved that idea because it was just a blank slate, really, because I just had no clue what I was doing. I was just a teenage girl. In I went, auditioned, it all went successfully. I was accepted into the Conservatorium of Music, and I just absolutely loved it. I mean, the 4 years that I studied in Brisbane at South Bank, they have such wonderful memories of that time. I mean, all I was doing was singing. It was just so wonderful, and I was getting a degree out of it. So I was improving on my skills. I was learning so much. And at the time, there were so many awards you could enter, so competitions to win awards and bursaries and scholarships. And I would just enter everything, anything that came my way, I would just put my entry form in, even if it wasn't even anything up my alley, like it was, if it was something for pop music or something, I would put in an entry form. So I was really ambitious, and I mean, I still am. I think that's just part of my character. So I never say no. I always say yes to things. And definitely that was when the Dame Joan Sutherland Opera Award came about. And I hadn't really heard of it before. And I saw a notice about it and I thought, you know what, I'm going to enter this. Everybody was so much older than me. Everybody was in their late 20s and their 30s. And there was me, a 21-year-old girl. Pretty crazy. And I just remember everybody just looking at me and laughing with me and just saying, oh, ha, 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 as if you'll ever win. You're too young, but it's great that you're giving it a go. And then the next minute, they announced the winner, and it was me. And I just couldn't believe it. And the organisers of the Dame Joan Sutherland Opera Award were the Noosa Federation of the Arts, and they absolutely supported my career and helped me with that prize money, which then enabled me to record my first EP album, which was the album that eventually landed on the desks of many influential people who have given me opportunities nowadays. So, yeah, absolutely. It was a wonderful experience and one that I would never take back. I would totally do it over again and again and again.
That is absolutely incredible. So, Marisha, even though you've spent many years travelling and performing overseas, you have also graced the breadth of Australia with concerts singing the classics. I first met you a few years ago when you performed in the Central West, but I believe you will be a bit further afield in February 2021 for your Salute to the Seekers tour in Dubbo and on other dates in Canberra, the Blue Mountains and the South Coast. What can people expect from these performances?
Oh, that's such a lovely question and so lovely put, Eleanor, because, you know, reflecting on my past and how much I love listening to the Seekers, I mean, this tour, A Salute to the Seekers, is really a salute to the four people that inspired me when I was such a young girl. And so this tour, it's called A Salute to the Seekers and the Classics. And basically it talks about my life up until now and how I salute the four people that inspired me to sing and what I'm doing now with it. So it is a mishmash of a complete different genre of music for me. So I've got the Seekers classics in there that everybody knows and loves. And then I've also got the classics I've sung around the world with Andre and in my solo tours. We're talking about big operatic arias, musical theatre, and then, of course, on the other hand, there's my own compositions because I love writing music too. So that's the cross-section of all the different styles of music. And basically they take the audience on a journey of, you know, what's my life and how did it come to be? And I relate everything back to the fact that I was inspired by the Seekers when I was such a young girl.
So you mentioned that you write your own music. Can you tell me a bit more about that process?
Yeah, so a number of years ago, I decided that I would come back to Australia. I was living in Europe, and I decided to come back to Australia and work with a producer who we'd met a production of Wicked in Melbourne, and he had said to me, "Oh my goodness, I love your voice, and I've written this song, and I think you should sing this song, but we should write together sometime." And I thought, "Oh, what a quaint question," because obviously I'd never been asked that before. And I was like, oh, you know, writing music, that sounds cool because it's something that I haven't really done before. So I flew to Melbourne and I worked with James Kempster on a number of songs. And one of the songs was Forever Shine. And I just love what we wrote together. It was so reflective of what I do as a singer, as a vocalist, and the things that I do with that crossover style. We wrote Forever Shine. And then when I went back to the Netherlands, I wrote another song called This Time Tomorrow with my friend Frank Steyn, who is the violinist and the carillonist with André Rieu. And so basically, I started to really get into this writing bizzo. And we released an album called This Time Tomorrow and a DVD where those songs features on a song called Journey, which I also wrote together with Frank Steyn. And basically, my love for songwriting was born. When I started my Salute to the Seekers tour in March, just before COVID hit, I was pulled off the road. But I was able to do two concerts of the tour. And in this concert, we debuted a new song that I'd written together with my musical director, Graham Press, called Morning Bird. And I just can't wait to hit the road again to perform my originals because I think it gives the audience a little bit more of an insight into who I am and the things that I think about. It was absolutely a shame to be pulled off the road while I was presenting such a beautiful program of songs, but it'll be back. It will be back.
Yes, I've heard some of the songs that you've wrote yourself, and I absolutely love them. They're some of my favourites.
Thank you so much.
You have released several solo albums, and your last single was I'll Never Find Another You. Can you explain the contrast between performing on stage to recording in a studio?
There's definitely a big difference. I mean, when I'm singing on stage, there's the vibe of the audience and you're there together. You're creating art together and there's a vibe in the room. And so you feed off that vibe as an artist. Yet when you go into a studio, it's that case of needing to find that vibe, even though there's no one there. And most of the time as a vocalist, you're just in a sound booth, which is closed off, and you've got the producer and the sound engineer in your cans, in your headphones. So basically, you're just alone. So you've got to try and harness that energy. It's very important to have the energy. And because you hear yourself so isolated when you're in studio, so when you go back to listen to what you've just recorded, I mean, that is a scary thing because you are really hearing yourself up close and personal. It's recorded there. So I think that's one of the things that's really difficult for young singers to learn, is to be able to let go of perfectionism, because every performance will be different. So every time you sing a song, it's going to be a different way that you've done it. And it's just about mixing that those tracks together and making it the way that it sounds realistic. I mean, I think one of the most important things as a recording artist is to keep it real. I'm not a big fan of voices that are highly processed and really auto-tuned. It just doesn't sound realistic, and it definitely takes away the emotion for me. I find that when there's a voice crack, when there's, you know, a breath or something, you know, just something a bit different about the voice, it makes it so much more real and so much more emotional. So it's definitely, for me, it's about that, not being too perfectionist, but definitely making it good. I mean, it can't be a dodgy recording. But yeah, no, it really is a great mix of things, and it's something that you learn over time.
Well, that's some good advice, Marisha. It has been an absolute pleasure talking with you today, and I am sure that listeners will be keen to look at your website at marisha.net to find out more about your shows and albums. Thank you for being with us today.
Thank you so much, and a big kiss to everybody around the world who's listening in today, and make sure to stay safe and stay healthy and stay happy.
That concludes today's interview. I hope you've enjoyed it as much as I have. This has been Eleanor Edwards. I now present the famous Marisha's rendition of I Am Australian.
I came from the dreamtime, from the dusty red soil plains. I am the ancient heart, the keeper of the flame. I stood upon the rocky shores, I watched the tall ships come. For 40,000 years I've been the first Australian. I came upon the prison ship, bowed down by iron chains. I bought the land, endured the lash, and waited for the rains. I'm a settler, I'm a farmer's wife on a dry and barren run. A convict, then a free man, I became Australian. I'm the daughter of a digger who sought the mother lode. The girl became a woman on the long and dusty road. I'm a child of the depression, I saw the good times come. I'm a bushy, I'm a battler, I am Australian. We are one, but we are men. Share a dream and sing with one voice.
Thank you.